Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. So you started a company, maybe even a tech company, and now it's time to scale, but you are a non-technical founder. Man, this is something I know all about. And despite employing 200 software developers at Fullscale, I'm still considered a non-technical founder. And actually, more people are non-technical founders than not. And that's what we are going to discuss today. Before we get into that, you should know that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping non-technical founders build software development teams quickly and affordably. With us today is another company off the Startup Hustle 2021 top startups list. I've got Ricardo Regalado, the CEO of we were debating, is it Root or Route? And according Route. To Ricardo, it is Route. And I agree with him, but it is regional. So you can go to getroute.com, GETROUTE.com. There's a link in the show notes straight out of Chicago. Ricardo, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thank you for having me, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I like to say no one tells the story better than founders and CEOs. So why don't you give us a little bit about your backstory and what you guys and gals have done to get on our top list of startups? Lay it on us.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, again, thanks for having me. Backstory is it's a fun one, man. I'm one of those founders that is building a software and a solution for the space that I actually have another business in. So I have a family cleaning business. And when I mean family, it's I have like 17 family members that work with me at that company. And we started that business about 8 years ago. And what we did was start off with commercial cleaning first, and it just expanded into multiple services in the facility services space. But as I grew that business, Matt, like, I mean, technology in the cleaning space is non-existent, but it's coming now, right? Like there is a lot of technology now in the past 5 years that I've seen hit the market. But there wasn't one for sales. There wasn't one for streamlining the walkthrough to the proposal in so many more facets that I struggled. You know, I hit a wall when I was growing that business. And that is really how Route came to be about, is I couldn't find a solution. So I said, hey, I'm in Chicago. There's a big technology ecosystem here at a place called 1871. And I was like, you know, why can't I do it? You know, like if there's nothing out there, why can't I come up with it if I know the pain points and I know my industry? And we, 2 years ago, maybe a little bit more than 2 years ago, we hit the ground running, started wireframing, came up with some ideas of what we thought the product would look like, entered a pitch competition. I won $40,000 with Capital One, and it was called Catapult. And it was awesome, man. I mean, for them to choose us based on wireframes and no customers, no business. I mean, we built the business plan during that, I guess you call like an accelerator incubator type of program. And with that money, I mean, we built the program and built the application, and we've been busting at the seams ever since.
I think I can build software, our famous words that non-technical founders say before they do it well, or before they enter the abyss or jump down the rabbit hole known as technology. There's, you know, one thing that I have learned in coming up on 15 years of doing this stuff myself is that building software is a lot harder than you think it is. It takes longer. It costs more money. There's like a lot of unanswered stuff. And, you know, that's a lot of great non-technical company or non-technical founders build solutions based around companies and businesses that they're already in and solving problems that they already have. Now, I know you hinted at this a little bit. Now, every good software has to solve a problem. What were a couple of the specifics that what were a couple of the pain points and the problems that get a route solved?
Yeah,
or is solving?
Yeah, great question, man. And that's what our 1.0 is today, right? Is the issues that I had a few years ago when I told you I ran into that wall is I had hit the $2 million mark as a revenue for my business. But I was at a standpoint. I couldn't grow much more. And that was because I was the one busy doing the walkthrough, the bid, the proposal, sending it out, try to do this in a timely manner while at the same time still wearing other hats in the business. It was a pain. It was a struggle, man. And I was like, man, how can I get what's in my head out so my team and other people can help me sell better, sell faster, sell together, which is our motto at Route. And that's what I set off to do is we have digitized the walkthrough, meaning, you know, think about if Startup Hustle had an office, a commercial office space, you would Google to look for a cleaning company. And the first thing they're going to do is a walkthrough of your space. Why? Because they're going to try to understand expectations. They're going to try to build a portrait of your space, get measurements, get estimate, calculate, give you a bid based on what your space looks like and what you need, right? That's been pen and paper up until Route, right? You go there with a notebook, you take some notes, you get some pictures with your phone, and you go back to the office. And this just takes time, man. So we were like, all right, well, let's try to streamline this. Came up with the application, which is 1.0 today, where we digitize it, man. You could go to a place, build a portrait of a space with the app, go back to the office, or even from your car, come up with a bid, create a proposal, and send it within an hour of you walking the space. And you could do this anywhere in the country. So it just doesn't have to be in Chicago. I could, which I've done proposals for Philadelphia, Dallas, Charlotte. I've never seen these spaces, but because the tool gives you all those solutions, we're able to do it, man, and scale the business. Rosalotto, using Route and some other technology, we're on pace to hit about $10 million in revenue based off from a couple of years ago.
So I would imagine another thing with the creation of quotes and estimates is that's heavily reliant on the person that does it. And so one person might be a little over aggressive. Another person might be really conservative. And I would imagine that you can probably get yourself into some non-profitable situations as well. I mean, I don't know too much about that.
You literally just said the number one issue in our industry. And it's underbidding. It's not maintaining profitability. It's business owners wearing too many hats. I mean, our industry is fragmented as hell, man. Like there's almost a million cleaning companies just in the US. 90% of them are operating at $1 million in revenue and under. And it's because a lot of them don't have the tools to scale, man. And that's why, you know, now 2.0 version, we're just adding more and more tools to allow the small business guys to compete with the bigger guys.
Yeah. And when you hear the term fragmented industry, that means that while there might be a couple big players that below that one, two or three spot, there's a zillion other people's. And the problem that occurs with that is these are usually companies and industries or just in general you look at insurance. That's one we've talked about. There's so many, all these like little offices everywhere that sell a bunch of different products and they're not full-time aligned with one company, like say State Farm or whatever. So what happens is they don't have the resources or interest or expertise to develop their own tools. And sometimes they try and they fail miserably. And that's one of the issues that I see a lot of people run into. So in order, like, so whenever you're building software, especially as a non-technical founder, I've made a few points here for us to discuss. Cause like I said, I've been a non-technical founder and have developed multiple platforms. And honestly, I spend a hell of a lot of time talking to non-technical founders about the things that I've learned. And, you know, with that, you know, first on that list is, as a non-technical founder, you have to have a strong grasp on about knowing what you need and want your product to do. You can't just say like, hey, I need this to bid for cleaning jobs. Cause if you give that to a technical team, they're going to go, and now what?
Oh man, Matt, that's my life, man. I could go on the background of, you know, in the beginning, I got lucky because I found my co-founder is technical, right? So I found him at 1871. He was going to come on as a consultant. And when he saw the project and saw the vision, he was like, oh, Rick, I want in. I want to do this with you, right? Young kid, hungry, gritty, self-taught coder, right? Where that's exactly what I would tell him. I was like, all right, Joe, this is what I want to do, man. I wanted to do this, and this. When can we launch? You know, how quickly can we get done? He's like, Rick, hold on. We got to do business logic. We got, even before the wireframes, we have to know functionality. Like, I learned a lot of terms. I learned a lot of language and a better understanding that in the first 6 months, we tried two agencies, one offshore, miserable experience, different time zones. They just didn't know what I was trying to do. Neither did I relate to them that I knew what I wanted to do. So having an internal team, because that's what we have, Matt. I've got three engineers in the office, one product designer, head of customer success. Our team is sitting elbow to elbow with me. And we go through sprints. I understand the logic behind, if I know what I wanted to do, like, I have to tell them in the easiest, most common sense way for them to understand, to then go ahead and, you know, build me a prototype or something clickable. So then we know ahead of time, before we go too far in the build, is this what you were talking about, Rick?
Yeah, and we're actually at Full Scale, we're actually in the business of helping people be successful with offshore teams, which is a real thing. Because if you don't know what you're doing, why would you think that the rest of your team would? And, you know, there's a lot of red flags that have come up, especially with talking to them. So actually our business model basically requires that our clients have someone here. It's not 100% offshore. We like people that we want you to be elbow to elbow with at least like one person that understands the tech, and then we scale the team from there. And that's the hard part about when we're talking about scaling as a non-technical founder. There's just this massive shortage of developers in the US. I mean, that's part of why my business even exists, because there's about 350,000 open jobs. So, you know, now one of the things, and as we move down the list of stuff here, you know, I can imagine how much you've learned.
Oh my God.
And the first couple years. So, you know, but you got to find advice and input from several people, not just one. And that's a mistake I see a lot of non-tech. They go find one person that is a developer or something, and that's the only input they get. And you'll find a wide array of input advice coming from a lot of people, some of which probably shouldn't even be giving you input, especially you structuring your business around. Yeah. So like, find as many people and as many sources of info. Because while you're non-technical, and non-technical is defined as like, I don't write code. I write checks. That's what I do. They're both important parts of the process, but you have to be able to communicate with your technical people on a level of basic understanding. It doesn't mean you need to write code, but you got to get a lot of input from a lot of different people. Is that something that you did?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, you nailed it, Matt. I think that's why we've seen some successes. I am that person who's I do not want to be the smartest person in the room. I can be the biggest dreamer, right? I'm a visionary, right? That's, I know it. I live it. I breathe it, but I will be the first to ask for help. I have, you know, a laundry list of people that I've emailed. I'll cold email you. If I see that you wrote an article or a blog that I find interesting, and then I'm like, hey, wait a minute, could that fit my model? Or could we do something like that? I will just literally blast you an email. You may answer, you may not, but I've learned that networking and collaborating and sharing your story opens up the floodgates for people that just, they like to hear people's stories, right? Like me and you are talking right now. We're sharing each other's stories and backgrounds. It's like, I might hit you up right after this to learn more about Full Scale, you know? Cause it's like, I know I can't, I don't have the, you know, I have five people on my team. I'd like to have 30. I'd like to have 40. Right. But that doesn't mean they have to be on my team. I can go reach out to you guys as resources. Cause that is how you scale, man. That's how I scaled my other businesses. Delegation.
Yeah. And with that, you led me right up to my next item. Consult the internet. It's like the simplest advice. Like I've learned 80% of the technical stuff that I've learned from Google.
Yeah.
Reading up, just Google it and read up. It's not that hard. You know, just read up a little bit and you get a better idea of like what's trending, what's going on, basic understanding. YouTube's a great, you know, form of input as well.
No, Matt, this is good vibe right here. Like think about, I Google everything first and then I'll reference it. Right. Cause I do have, you know, now I have some advisors on the team. Now I know some of the Chicago ecosystem, which there's a lot of brilliant minds here in Chicago. So I don't even have to go that far, right. To be able to know tech stack, to know, you know, marketplace versus SaaS, you know, what do we want to do? Do we want to go sell to the consumer? You know, what's a safe note? What's a convertible note? If I'm going to fundraise, who should I be talking to? Did I speak to investors too early? Which I did, by the way. And my angel told me, like, Rick, you're going to fall, you know, flat on your face, but this is good for you. Learn, you know, understand what investors are looking for, because that's the biggest difference for me, Matt, is with my other two businesses, I never raised money. Like we just grew and the business sustained itself. But with technology, it's like, man, if you want to scale, you ultimately have to fundraise, right? And you have to find the right people that are going to give you an influx of capital that, you know, you're going to marry them. You're in bed with these investors and you better know what you're doing and you better have a game plan, because then you shouldn't be out there fundraising. And it's more of, is it a lifestyle or is it a venture back type of solution that you're building?
You better hope it's not a lifestyle business if you're talking to VCs, because they'll tell you that you're wasting their time. And in regards to, you know, all of it, and that's so in my book, Million Dollar Bedroom, I actually give some advice. I'm like, be careful, choose your partners and investors wisely, because it's easier to get rid of your spouse than it is to get rid of your partners. It's true. It's true. And, you know, so, and that's one of the differences that, you know, I'm glad you brought up the fundraising part, because, you know, one of the things that with a service business is the path to revenue is fairly short. You found an account, you cleaned a place, you got paid. That wasn't like a software product, which are, I mean, historically and almost guaranteed to be a cash suck for a while, for a lot of different reasons. And
I've bootstrapped, Matt. So I know, like, we've been bootstrapping for 2 years, and it's like, you know, with the service business, there's no CAC, you know, there's no LTV. Yep. The marketing campaign is so much different. You don't have a head of customer success for a service business, you know, like, yeah, you have customer service, but it's a different beast, man. But I'll tell you, you said it too, where if you're going to get into the software business, you better have a passion for it, because there's a lot to learn, man. And if you don't learn it, I really say shame on you, because, you know, like, even though we're non-technical, I'm sure you can, you know, you ask yourself or myself questions that will eight or nine times out of 10, we'll know the answer, because like you said, we researched it. Because it's like when people are trying to raise money or say they have the best solution, but they didn't do any research or are, you know, expect not to be, you know, have an understanding of anything technical. It's like, man, you got to know something though, right? Don't you agree?
Yeah. And you know, when it comes to a lot of people, the thing I've learned is whether it's a developer or someone else is they tend to give advice that is very centric around the things that they understand. Like if they're a .NET developer, or they like Microsoft platform, then that's always their recommendation. But they often don't know why. You know, they're not giving you a big why. And you know, one of the things that I have on this list as well is, well, first off, you do need to find either a strong technical lead or a strong technical services partner. And the thing is like, you can't, like, 12, 15 years later, I can have highly technical conversations, but I still don't practice the stuff. So you need to either have that as someone that's on your team that can help decipher and decode what the hell some of these people are even talking about, or have a strong partner that does it. It sounded like you didn't get that in a prior relationship. And here's the thing is, there are companies out there that are, I'm going to use the word predatory, but that's maybe a little strong, but they know, trust me, they know when they're talking to non-technical people. So they can tell you, oh, it's just going to take longer. It's going to take longer, but you don't know. And that's where strong technical partners, advice, and in my case, experience, like, I have a very strong grasp at this point, how long anything should take. And it doesn't mean I'm right, but I have a strong sense for whether it's going fast, whether it's going slow, or whether it's kind of right where it should be. No, and that either comes from experience or input.
That's a great piece of advice, Matt. I didn't have that in the beginning, but then once I found it and I did find my technical co-founder, it was night and day from, you know, understanding commitments from a dev agency or just an engineer or developer in general. Like, there's nothing speaks better than confidence, right? Than saying like, okay, we know, you know, what the framework is going to look like. You know, we may not be doing it all ourselves, but we understand what expectations look like. And here's why, because we do a lot of things internal, right? But as a startup, you need, you're right. You need, I don't know if it's just offshore in general, but you need a partner. I mean, we have found the supplemental partner here in Chicago where we know the capacity that our internal team can do, and then what they need to do in order for us to hit the market with new features and products, because you know, I can't hire everybody, right? Like the burn would burn you out, right? I would close the doors if I had to pay for all the engineers in house. It's just not possible to scale. For now.
Yeah, that's what we did at Full Scale. So I had employees in the Philippines for 8 or 9 years before we ever did anything client services oriented. And then with my business partner, Matt Watson, who's also a frequent co-host of mine on the show, he had basically, in many ways, become envious of the team that I had built in the Philippines, and the accessibility and the affordability and also the stability. Because that's another thing too, is the market here is so competitive that well, a lot of people watch their tech team. It's just kind of looks like a carousel here, because the big companies, Google, Amazon, whoever it is in your town, buys them up, and they have a deeper wallet and honestly, on many days, more attractive positions because they have benefits and, you know, things that, I don't know. I mean, eventually you got to think about it, is the idea that everyone wants a couple percent of your startup, and they're going to be able to go home and sell that to mama. You know, like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, people have lives, and they like, people generally favor stability and a lot of that stuff. And startups don't usually offer
that.
So you got to kind of have that dreamer or whatever. So, you know, and like you said, when it comes to like strong technical part, like what we did at Full Scale is basically we created the model the way we would want it as founders. And, you know, you talk about communication and time zones, like our time, like our shifts overlap with the morning or the afternoon here. And then we have another one that overlaps all day. So you're guaranteed to know when those people are available to have structured formal conversations. And don't overvalue the whole, oh, I need to be able to reach them all day. Do you want them writing code or talking to you all day? Because you're going to have to pick one or the other. Yeah. Dude. And that's an important one too. And then, you know, another thing is, and this is kind of the next part, and this is what is really, really, really tough to do, especially even for experienced people, is how do you assess whether anyone's any good at what they do?
I could talk about this for days. That was my in the beginning.
Well, I could too, because that's technically what I'm in the business of at this point is recruiting. We say recruiting, assessing, retaining, and employing.
No, and Matt,
the assessment part is tough.
It is. And that's where the first engineer gave me the greatest advice that I got as far as, you know, I did the hiring, Matt. I hired our first engineer. I had no business doing that. I just went off the resume and I went off personality and I went off our interview. Right. And I'm a nice guy already. Everybody knows that at the office. They're like, Rick, you're the nicest boss in the world. So months had passed, Matt. And I was like, man, you know, is he doing what he's supposed to be doing? Oh yeah. He's doing what he's supposed to. Yeah. Okay. We're good. And we're talking about month 4 or 5. And it's like, what, you know, we got a sign up screen done. And I was like, what the, something's gotta be up here. So that's when my technical co-founder came into play and he was like, Rick, something's going on. Reevaluate. We have to part ways. So when we parted ways, Matt, what the kid told me, I won't name any names. He was just like, Rick, you know, one piece of advice, man, is interview you didn't interview me, man. You just hired me from the whim. You didn't really put me through any ringer. You didn't test me. I really got one on you, but here's advice that I'm giving you. This is a kid. He just told me that. And he's like, but what I'm going to tell you is, you know, test the next person, put them to the test, understand what they're building for you, you know, make a project. He actually gave me good advice. Right. So then what do we do moving forward? Every person we've brought on, we've tested them. We've done 3 or 4 interviews. We've had my advisor ask questions and then to this day, we still have those guys on the team and they're producers, but it was because of that gentleman that opened my eyes to say, you know, Rick, I can't do what I did normally in the other businesses where we just hired off a personality and what I thought was work ethic. Cause man, assessing an engineer, a developer, or even a designer is night and day from a service business to a software business.
I'll give you some insight. We've created 40 different certification assessments.
Well, I need some of those.
40, man. Think about that. And that's that's everything from core technologies to things like algorithms, problem solving, you know, all the way down to English language. And, you know, those are all, they were created. That's where, so my business partner is quite technical. I mean, he sold his first software company for $150 million. I go with the assumption that he knows what he's doing on most days. And with those assessments, the thing is you want to see people do it, not just answer trivia questions, you know? So they're heavily weighted in the writing code. And these assessments are things hey, here's some code. There's a problem in here. This is what you need to do. And I knocked the timer because want to see people perform under pressure, and a disappearing clock is one of those things because you have deadlines, you have other things, and some people panic, man. They're just like, you know, so yeah. I think that the speed and accuracy are important because someone that arrives at the solution 3 times slower than the other person is actually technically 3 times more expensive. And then other things too. So that's not even our main, that passing one of those of our 40 assessments just earned you a technical interview. And then we sit them in front of, we've got 16 different people at our company that are experts at what they do. And that's the key thing, because you can't fake it past those guys.
No,
and gals.
Yeah.
Well, you can't. They know, if you sit me down and let me talk to an entrepreneur for an hour, I feel at the end of that conversation, I'm going to have a pretty strong grasp on whether or not they know what they're talking about or not.
Yeah.
It's just hard to bullshit your way through that. And then we're still not even done, Ricardo. Then there's another interview and we're looking for things like experience, relevant experience, passion. Because if you put people in front of what they're passionate about, they go, go, go.
Oh, they go, they go.
You have communication, attitude, likability, leadership, all these intangible things. And there's 10 of those total. And that might get you recommended to get a job offer. So overall, it's about 1 out of 75 people make it through that gauntlet.
But talk about after they make it through that gauntlet, how confident do you feel of that team member?
100%.
You're going to put them on 100%. A project for somebody, because it's, you touched on things that people just don't realize are necessities, like the grit, the passion, the, you know, yep. You know, reacting to different situations that are going to
occur. That's another thing too. We have a rating. We have a 5-point rating scale. Like five is the highest. Like what level of technical difficulty will this person likely still thrive in? And like a 4, like a 3 is an average. Like your site's probably a 3 because it's not like processing billions of data points or doing something wild or crazy. It's kind of a standard SaaS platform.
Yeah.
And then you get into things that have a lot of moving parts and gears. And then 5 are the things that are just like almost living, breathing organisms. They have machine learning and my business partner has another company, Stackify. It processes a couple billion data points a day. That's complex.
That's complex.
Yeah, so but getting an idea of where people are going to thrive, because not all platforms require programmatic genius. Sometimes it's common sense, organization, and being able to put things together. And there's a lot to be said about the people that do that really well, as opposed to the kind of weird genius that does something that no one else really does well yet.
Well,
those are different people often.
That's a great topic on complementary team members, right? Like, that person who's the data scientist and complex, you know, the database on the back end versus the common sense engineer, what upfront order, you know, an introvert versus an extrovert. So it's like, there's a lot of personalities that go into building software, because as a non-technical founder, man, like you sometimes feel like, man, you're in a room with people that are smarter than you and that are talking a language that you may not know. You have an understanding, but you're banking on them to build your baby and build your product. So it takes a lot of cojones, you know, from our end, to entrust in these people. But I mean, that's something I was going to ask you too, Matt, like what you guys are doing with Full Scale, because this is something I always thought about, like, is it, I don't want to say business model, but is it your guys' mission? Because I feel like this is a need for tech, especially non-technical founders, is, you know, we shouldn't make those mistakes up front. We should entrust in companies like you guys or a dev team. You know, again, like you said, having one internal founder or team member that is within our organization. But if we want to build something to get to market and something that's going to be sustainable and a product that is going to get beat up and used by the public, we should find companies like you guys to get us there quicker. But then is it your mission to also help us as non-technical founders build an internal team alongside your team?
Yes and no. So we like to see, our goal is to just try to help people avoid pitfalls that, you know, like there's all these, especially early, you know, there's, if you're an early stage company and you have two developers on your team and you hire the wrong two people, that could be the end of your mission.
Yeah.
Because you just lose time, you lose money, you lose traction. And so like with our hiring model what I found, and this is why that first point of knowing what you need and want the product to do, like that's your vision. Like when you hire developers, don't expect them to immediately understand that. You have to be able to convey that. So
convey that,
You know, we say no to more clients than we say yes to, which is a weird thing for when a lot of people hear it. They're like, why would you turn down business? I'm like, because we've realized that we got to be good at, we just want to be A+ at the one thing that we're good at, which is helping people build the team. So sometimes you talk about advice, like we'll tell people, we'll say, we want to see a lead developer, a product manager, or a project manager, some kind of ownership on here. And it's not, our clients aren't just in the United States. We have some in Australia and some in England and a couple in Canada. And one in Puerto Rico, which I want to go visit. So I can
say go visit there.
yeah. Well, the Philippines is pretty nice too. It's tropical there every day of the year. But with that, the thing is you have to place a lot of value on that internal discussion that companies have and being able to have an understanding. When you hire developers, that's kind of like hiring a building crew to come in. And, you know, like on the web series that we have for Startup Hustle TV, you'll see the Perkins brothers. Those guys make their own plans and CAD drawings and everything before they build a house.
Oh yeah.
And the thing is, without that, the rest of the people, like the carpenters, all of them, they show up and they're like, where are the plans? And no, if those plans don't exist and you just have a bunch of people just like pounding nails and doing what they want, well, not only are you not going to know, is no one going to know who did what later, you have no accountability to check and see if they did and all of that. So like sometimes we'll tell people, we take a consultative approach with all of our clients and we'll say like, look, you might want to have this position locally. And then we've got other things. So like we only do developers full time, but we have some other piecemeal things that you can do fractionally, like project managers or sometimes just goofy things like graphic design. Like sometimes you just need a designer for a day. It could take you it could take you a couple weeks to find someone that you want and then hope they get it done. And you, next thing you know, you've spent 32 hours trying to find someone that you need for 8 hours worth of service. So some of the stuff's in-house. And then another thing's like QA. Having a good people, and this is the non-technical thinking, like, oh, well, shouldn't a developer also be able to find their own errors? It's not always about that. It's about perspective sometimes. And you get so close to something for so long, it's sometimes hard to see the flaws.
You get
biased. Another thing too is why pay someone $40 an hour to do something that someone else will do for 20? I've as a non-technical founder, I've moved to the area of believing, you know, you want your developers developing, your testers testing, your whoever doing what, you know, and that should be the goal. Cause it's just like, well, I'm a big baseball fan. You don't put your catcher in center field. You don't see that a whole lot. He doesn't walk out to the mound and throw pitches. You have people, especially in technical roles, and I get now full scale. We're overwhelmingly high level. Like we want senior. Like 80% of our employees have 6 or more years of experience doing what they're doing.
Yeah,
and there's something I've learned to appreciate, and this will kind of move us down on the next talking point. Don't become obsessed with cheap. This person's like $10 an hour on some weird, freelancer site. Well, there's a reason for that. There really is. And, you know, the people that have experience and understanding, they accumulate less technical debt. And technical debt, if you've never heard of that and you're non-technical, those are all the things that you do because you're either taking a shortcut or you don't know what you're doing, and they eventually need to get fixed. And the problem is a lot of times businesses realize they have to mend and patch their technical debt at times that they've already gained a little bit of traction. And it's heartbreaking because you have to stop what you're doing. You can't change a car's tires while it's in motion, or at least if you do, it's going to be one hell of a work in progress. So did you go through the technical debt accumulation at any point?
We got some of that.
Talk a little bit about that, because I think that's important when it comes to scaling.
Well, in the beginning, again, we thought, you know, time was of the essence, right? We need to get a product out. We need to launch. We need it to get.
And that's okay. Products. Yeah.
And that's what, it was. So it's like, it was good and bad. Like we knew 1.0 that we have right now got us, you know, we're over 200 companies using the product in 5 different countries, but we got a lot of feedback on things that when we went to market was a question mark already. Right. We were like, ooh, we're going to get some feedback on this, but you know, hey, we're live. And it's just like, oh, so now we got to go back and fix it. 2.0 is, you know, just creating, you know, I guess, what do you say? Parity between what 1.0 is to 2.0, but there's things there, even like on the database, on the back end, on, you know, certain decisions that we made that, you know, they weren't my decision entirety, but it's like, oh man, you know, my co-founder hates the word technical debt because it's like, we could have avoided some of those things. So I'm glad you brought that up. Cause you know, I didn't know that as a non-technical founder. I knew what the word was, but I didn't know what it meant, you know, to where we are now 18 months later, where it's like, damn, you know, but it's okay. As long as we learn from it now, we push forward.
I don't think you truly understand technical debt as a founder until you have to pay the debt back.
That's it.
I had to do that. I had to do that with Gigabook. I mean, at one point it cost me about $100,000 to redo a whole lot of stuff. And it also took 3 months to get that done. And it was just like, so sometimes the way you build things, because you don't know what you don't know until the moment you realize you don't know it. And sometimes building software and building applications is kind of like Legos, you know? And if you have kids, and I think you said you have a 2-year-old, which means if you have Legos, they've all just become one big set. They're not like five different kits anymore. So you start building it. Next thing you know, they're coming in the room and they're going, "Daddy, look, I built a castle." And you're like, "Castle doesn't have one wheel on it." And it doesn't have a wing sticking out the side, but that's kind of what software ends up somehow as you get, you know, you get months into it and you say, "Oh shit, we didn't even think about this. And now we've got to put this in there." So you start stacking things upon other things. And then that's where I think what non-technical people really underestimate is the complexity that begins to multiply when features and other things and integrations and all that have to start working with each other. Because the more things you build and stack on top of each other, it's not like just one level harder. It's an exponent harder. Because if you have one thing that only attaches to one other thing, that's fine. But if you want to add in one more thing, when you've already got six other things, that's six things to connect it to, often not just one. And you look at something like an invoice, let's say, and this is where you don't think about it. Like, it's easy to make a straightforward invoice. It's the hard part is what happens if that needs to change after that, or gives a refund or goes somewhere else, or just like, I mean, it gets nasty.
I got one for you as far as like even signups, right? Locks and keys, people going from a free plan to a paid plan, back to a free plan. The little things where I was like, "Wait, what? This is an issue." What, like, "Oh, we gotta fix this." Like, "Yeah, Rick, we didn't think about it in this scenario, right? Like, what if, you know, a client of a customer wants to sign up as a merchant, or you're doing subcontracting because in our industry there's a lot of subcontracting going on, where it's who has visibility and permissions versus the other, like little things that when you're signing up to a software, like any typical software nowadays, I have an appreciation now for when I'm signing up for things and I'm like, "Oh man, they thought about that." Ooh. You know, like
I have an appreciation for how long things take in general. And that's going to lead me to I have a key point. And for those of you that are listening, this is part of what you waited for. Before I tell you what that is, I want to remind you that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. So yeah, by the way, we have 180 developers who at this moment of recording are 100% busy with clients, which is crazy. Nice, I think that says a lot about what we're doing. But one thing as a non-technical person, and this is like, oh man, I probably should have just started with this because this is so key. Just because you want it done by a specific date and time does not make it possible. You can't, like, and I run into technical, they're like, "We've got this launch in 2 weeks," and they just really like they've got it in their head, but they really don't have any understanding about what it's going to take to get there. So they end up they lead the business astray. They drive themselves crazy. They get angry at their team. They tell people that they're failing, but they may have had something that because you want it done by a certain time doesn't mean that it is. That it's capable. Have you run into that? Did you have to learn that yet?
I'm learning that. And I appreciate that now, man. Like, cause like every aspect of building a software now, I understand the commitment of time, and I don't put my team members in any constraint anymore. Like I used to in the beginning, I would be that guy. "Hey, you know, we've got that show coming up in four weeks, the convention. Let's make sure we have this and that ready." Because we've gone to a show with a feature not ready like it should have been, and you know, we would pay the price. So now it's like, it's crazy. Like, we know we're gearing up for stuff right now, and I take into consideration even the conversations that we're going to have to plan for the master plan, which then we have a huddle up, then a kickoff meeting, and then wireframe, and then design. Like, before the product is even going to have a first line of code written, there is so much time before that goes into that I never really understood until really the last 3-4 months of being involved with the design and like the framework behind everything now. It's, man, like I do not put pressure unless I need to, right? Like right now, we have some dates for this year that, you know, 3-4 months from now, we're given enough time for it. But if you told me this a year ago today, I wouldn't have had the bandwidth. I would have expected and been pissed off. I would have been like, yo, what, why isn't this ready for launch? You know, I told you guys, you know, in 3 weeks, we got to be ready. And it's like, it's unnecessary pressure on the team when you do that to them.
Yeah. And the non-technical founder often doesn't understand that there's many times a lot of, I refer to it as framing and plumbing. These are things that like when building a house, they're not sexy. You don't really like, You don't always notice a ton of progress when with framing and plumbing. Like you'll see the frame, but you don't realize like all these things that go. And when you start something from scratch, the amount of time it takes to build the framing and plumbing and the basement and the foundation and all those things, you'll get into like you said, well, kind of like you felt, you could find yourself at month 3 and you're like, I only have a sign up page. Now, I don't know if that's good or bad. It kind of depends on what you're building, but you know, that's not probably a great thing. Now, one of the things that I have on this list that I think is important too, and we talked earlier in the episode about getting advice from people that have valid input. And I want, if you're non-technical, I want you to at all costs avoid obscure technology. And obscure technology is, unless it is the only option to create your solution, you need to avoid it like the plague. Because this is what I run into, is someone talks to their cousin and their cousin's a programmer somewhere, and he's like, you should really consider this because it's going to be the next big thing. And then it's not. And then someone built their platform in some weird ass coding language that they can't find people to work on it. And they were already in a marketplace where the supply and demand equilibrium for developers is crazy out of balance. And now you have reduced your options to a minimum. And I'm talking, these are things that just like, they're like number 28 on the list of most popular coding languages, Hub or something, you know, and there's all these great weird, like the more standard and more conventional you keep it, the more people that are out there that can possibly join your team and work on it. Cause one of the things is if you go with the obscure stuff, even after you realize you have a hard time finding people to work on it. And then you have to go to the next option, which is people that are willing to learn how to work on it. You're starting from scratch.
Yeah,
starting from scratch.
That's a great topic. I mean, it really is. Cause like we ran into, you know, we built the application in React Native on the mobile app, right? Cause we wanted to have both Android and iOS.
Which is very common now, but 2 years ago wasn't.
No. Yeah. And that's where 2 years ago is when we did it. And it's like the person that we had hired, remember in the beginning, he was a Swift guy, you know? So like, we thought he knew React because
Swift is a good example.
Yeah.
Swift is a good example. Like, and it's an iOS thing only.
That's it. Yeah. So like I get you on that. Like right now we're, you know, like debating MongoDB, we're debating, you know, Flutter, like they're common now, right? When you think of, you know, if Google's using it to build applications, I got to believe it's, you know, you can find the people to work on products. But again, 6 months ago, Matt, I wouldn't even be talking about this because I wouldn't have known or thought of this, because you're right. Like you have to think of recruiting. You have to think of, if you're going to build things on a tech stack that is not common, who's going to do it for you? How are you going to find these people? It's already hard to be competitive as a startup with the bigger guys, but now you're kind of pigeonholing yourself into an obscure piece of technology stack that now you're like, you have to really search for somebody to work on your project.
Yeah. And now if the only people that know how to do what you're doing are, you have to hire out of Google,
That's not a good thing. How are you going to get that from Google?
Might be expensive too.
Yeah.
So, you know, and will they even let him go?
Yeah.
You know, so that's another thing. So, you know, with that, I think, and you mentioned this earlier, I think you gained a better understanding of what you needed, both for your platform and then also for your people. And some of that starts with, you need to have really strong job descriptions as far as like what exactly you want your technical team to do. It's as important as your product roadmap. A lot of developers, especially ones that have a lot of experience, have often worked around lots of different technology and lots of different things. That's sometimes good and sometimes not. I think that, you know, one thing I'm seeing a lot of developers, they say, I'm a front end or a back end developer. They often don't want to do both because there's a lot of complexity on both sides of the stack these mm-hmm. days. And you have to give people a good idea of what it is you want them to do. Because, you know, I think if you're a really early stage business, you want to try to find people that are as versatile as possible and can do as many things because yep. you need that Swiss Army knife.
Yep.
It's when you gain traction and later you can hire specialists like yep. this person just does our API.
Yep. No,
you
yeah.
know, and that's like right. all they get. That's all they have to obsess with as opposed to like 10 different things that are, you know, don't often require high levels of expertise, but having some experience, but also with those job descriptions. And I'll say overwhelmingly, I'm not a huge job description person because yeah. I think everyone's job description is to do what the company needs them to do to be successful.
Correct.
But on the technical side, you got to give people a strong idea. Try to align people with the things that they're passionate about, because when you're passionate about something and you want to do it, well, then you'll want to do it.
You'll get it done.
If not, then yeah. you just won't do it and you won't give a shit about it and you end up with kind of a sloppy situation. And then the last thing on my list, and before we prepare to round out this episode, is, you know, there's a lot of managed services out there. When I say managed services, like services that, well, like Rackspace is a good example. It's a server and a hosting company, but you can have a managed service aspect to it. And yeah, you're going to pay more, but you can call them. Yeah. And say, you know, my database seems to be running remarkably slow, and they look at it and try and will tell you what's wrong with it. And mm-hmm. Sometimes things like that for the non-technical are the way to go, because your other alternative is you got to have someone that knows what they're doing. Everyone's like, yeah, use Amazon Web Services. That's a very raw, unmanaged kind of service. And yeah. if you don't know what you're doing in and around those servers, you can spend a hell of a lot of money on it. And there's just other things too. So a lot of managed services that are out there are a good option for the non-technical, because you're kind of hedging in many ways. You might yeah. look at some months, you're like, I pay for these managed services, but I didn't even use them. It's yeah. the times that you do.
Yeah.
And it was my mom of all people that taught me this lesson, because I built my first software platform in like basically a shared cloud at GoDaddy, and it got hacked. This is like 12 years ago. My site was down for days, and I had called this other manager, was Rackspace. And I called them and I was talking to my mom, and I was like, God, I'm really frustrated. And she said, why? I said, well, my website's been down for days. I'm bleeding cash. This is terrible. I've got another option, but it's three times more expensive. And she said, how expensive was it to be offline?
There you go.
You know, and this is my mom, was the least technical woman ever, you know, like, yeah. I mean, so, and that's fine, but she had a really good point there. So, you know, what do you want to focus on? Like keeping tires on the car, doing other things. So you just got to kind of make those decisions, but you're going to pay for them one way or the other.
You're going to pay for them, man. Like my wife laughs at me when I used to just, when we would buy furniture or buy different things, I'd be like, oh, I'll install it. I'll pick it up and I'll do the delivery. And she's like, you just wasted half a day picking up a truck, going to pick up when there's people that do this kind of a service, Rick. Stop.
Yeah.
So yeah, yep. I hear you. I hear you for sure.
So I end my episodes with the Founders Freestyle, which we'll get to in just a second. And I say my episodes because I'm not the only host on Startup Hustle. Make sure to tune in on Tuesdays with Andrew Morgans, where you get to talk all about e-commerce and Amazon. Tune in on Thursdays with Lauren Conaway. She's the founder of Innovate Her. talks about all different subjects and all different kinds of stuff. If you haven't had enough Startup Hustle at that point, check out Startup Hustle TV. We are on our, at the time of recording this, on about our fifth week of that. And that is our web series that is giving you a look at entrepreneurship and being a startup founder through the lens of entrepreneurs and startup founders. One advice I can give you, Ricardo, is don't ever start your own TV show.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of work. We started a show about startups and the show is a startup. So that's kind of fun. It's also a lot of work, much like startups. Now, when I say the founders freestyle, I like to give founders a chance to address the jury of sorts, and say whatever you'd like to say to our listeners on the way out. It can be about whatever you want in this case. So yeah. What would you like to say to all the founders and people that want to be founders?
Man, I don't know this question was going to come up, but you know what? Actually, listening to our conversation, Matt, I would say, you know, not a question to you, but maybe a statement of, man, being a non-technical founder is actually fun. It's been, I love challenges, and this has been the biggest challenge, one of the biggest challenges of my life, because of the fact of not being as confident as I was in the beginning. But I'll tell you, man, if you're a developer, or if you're in, you know, a like a full scale, and Matt, like in your position, I gotta believe you guys love speaking to non-technical founders that are building solutions for their space or their subject matter, because I'm gonna tell you, man, there's nobody that has more passion. The non-technical founders that know their space and are building a solution for their space. So anybody who's out there that thinks they have a solution or running into pain points, and they just, you know, ask themselves, well, I don't know what anything about technology. Why the hell would I try to take such a risk? Because it is one of the biggest risks I've ever taken, but nothing empowers my industry now, or my way of a mission, which is empowering my space, than building solutions for the small business community that I'm doing. So it's like, just again, to all the non-technical founders, even just technical founders, right? Because in that sense, technical founders may not have the grit of an entrepreneur that's built a business already, where they both marry and complement each other very well, that just get out there and do it, man. Find people like you, Matt, that have the wherewithal and understanding on how to build a product. But at the same time, it just takes multiple people to make it. I mean, I was shocked with, in Chicago, how many startups there are and then how many startups fail. Like, I still can't get over that number where, you know, it's insane. 97, 98% startups fail. That tells you there's a lot of people trying to build businesses, but I feel like we have to pick each other up and have these kind of conversations, because you just shared so many nuggets. If people actually, you know, if you're listening, some of the stuff you're touching on, that was my life, man. You know, in the first 2 years of my business. So just know it's going to be a tough road. It's not easy building technology, but it's damn fun doing it with the people around you that you care about.
Well said, sir. Well said. And for my freestyle, I think I'm going to, I mean, I'll parlay off a lot of what you said. You know, there's a lot of information out there, and there's everything from like this podcast, and this isn't the first time we've touched the subject. There's just a lot of info out there. If you're going to have a technology startup, you can't ignore technology. You're going to have to, if you're non-technical, you're going to have to immerse yourself for a lot of different reasons. I mean, some investors aren't going to want to put money into your company if you're completely aloof when it comes to all of the technical things. It doesn't mean you have to write code. No. People ask me all the time. They're like, dude, are you a programmer? I'm like, no, I not even close in that regard. But I can sit down and have highly technical conversations. It took me a long time to get to that point. But the baseline of that is highly accessible. Like, you don't have to have deep understanding. Like you mentioned React Native. Well, React Native is a mobile platform that's cross-compatible. And the benefit of that, and here's the key, understand the benefits of what different tech does. The benefit of that particular technology is it gets you right at the doorstep of submitting an iOS and an Android app while maintaining one code base.
Yep.
And that means you don't have to build two separate things. Now, you had mentioned Swift earlier, which is an obscure technology as far as I'm concerned. A lot of people use it, but it's not super common. if you get a developer that specializes in just that, you may have to hire another one to get your Android app out. Yeah, and like so as two. A startup, that's not the, and then you have two products to maintain, you have two different skill sets. And so, you know, that's where doing that research and understanding what the options are, talking to people that have done it, like one conversation with me about you wanting to build a mobile app would involve me asking what you've already built and if you had any idea about how you wanted to build it. And my advice, and I don't care, like I have no vested interest in React or its platform, but there are multiple options yeah. that do stuff like that. And how easy is it going to be for you to find people to do it? What are you likely to run into? But really in the end, what are the benefits of using the things that you use? Like there's certain, like I said earlier, certain types of programmers and technical people, because if your business is going to get big, you're going to have more of them. And if they're not around, you're going to have two options. You're going to pay huge for some folks. And I think you need to do that on some level anyway. And then you also have other people, but you can end up in situations where you're paying someone $100 an hour to do stuff they don't even want to do because it's kind of not really at the level that they want to be working at technically. And there's someone else somewhere that'll do it for 25.
Yep.
And you know, that makes it four times more expensive. So you got to understand what you're getting into. Don't sacrifice the long term on the altar of the immediate.
Yep.
And that is tough to do because you still got to get a product out quickly. You still got to get user feedback. You got to do a lot of stuff. So, I mean, really in the end, you're never going to know if you made the right or wrong decisions until way down the road. So you got to, at some point, you got to just kind of take a chance and, you know, I trust your gut in many cases, or find people who you can trust to lean on. So Ricardo, thanks for joining me, man. I'm going to catch up with you down the road.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
All right.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button. Then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.